on my work today that I we work with directly with upper management people and helping them to understand that data and how that impacts performance and everything. So what they like to see oftenly is what's the big picture outcome of what we are doing, right? In terms of profitability and scalability. So if you start putting numbers of what's the impact of this factor on performance and what will be the ROI on that. So I think that's the type of language that upper management people would like to see.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Hello and welcome back to Swine It. This is a part of a series on leadership, and we have here today Dr. Edison Magalhães from Iowa State University. Well, Edison, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure for me to be here. So looking forward for our discussion.
Yeah, so am I. And so, Edison, you're known for your expertise in big data, right? Including consolidating data sets, revealing drivers of performance in swine data sets, identifying causal relationships with production metrics, prediction models such as the pig quality, the piglet winning quality score. But how did you get here? So can you summarize your professional and academic background to that led you to where you are today at Iowa State?
Yeah, sure. So I've been in the academia for the past 6 years. The initial 5 years as a master's and graduate PhD student here at Iowa State University, and more recently since July last year as an assistant professor here at the Department of Animal Science, also here at Iowa State University. But before that, my background, I'm originally from Brazil, and that's where I did my vet school over there. And after graduating, after finishing my DVM there in Brazil, I worked for around 4 years in the Brazilian swine industry. So I initially, during my vet school, a lot of internships, and I actually had opportunity to spend a year here, 1 year doing internship here in the U.S. back in 2012, 13. And then I went back to Brazil, finished vet school, and worked for around 4 years there. So trying to get a lot of field experience and... Mm-hmm. Although after these years, I went back to academia. We started my path in academia with some background in the field.
And you work today in this project that you call the PROSPER, right? The Predictors of Swine Performance. And how does that help industry leaders to effectively lead their teams and do their job? Mm-hmm. How does that connect?
Yeah, so this project where we mostly apply data science concepts to swine data from producers that are partners, our partners in this project. What we basically do is, and this is a reality that we saw, that I saw back in the field in Brazil when I was a swine practitioner, and I saw here when I started my master's and PhD, where we would have a lot of data, but the decisions that we are making based on those data streams are very, let's say, poor. So we built partnerships with producers, and from that process, built automated models to integrate and analyze that data in order to provide a pipeline that will provide alerts and be able to do an analysis of that information, and all of that together providing information back to producers so they can do, let's say, data-driven decision-making, helping on the data-driven decision-making process, right? Which some sort of people would do that, but we want to apply and improve that concept for the people in the industry. So that's what I've been working for the previous 5-6 years in this Prosper project, where we build this partnership with producers and help them to understanding what are the factors impacting the performance of their system based on the information that they are already collecting using machine learning and data science concepts.
Fortiva is moving beyond feed additives to create foundational ingredients that work with your pig's physiology to support resilience and health. With proven technologies like Ambitine, Flow Matrix, and Endura, Fortiva helps you address the toughest challenges in swine production. From gut health to growth performance, together we can make animals more resilient in the face of future challenges. Learn how at FortivaImpact.com.
And when it comes back to the decisions, Edson, some really trust their gut feeling, their intuition, and some others just love data and make decisions solely based on data, right? If we're a Star Trek fan, as I am, you know, it's the Captain Kirk, it's the intuition, and Spock is the data, all about data. And so what's your take on that? What's your take on this approach, or of how do you make decisions?
Yeah, that's a good comparison. I would say that they're not opposing forces. Let's say the gut feeling and the data part. I think they're more complementary to each other, right? So I think the experience and the intuition, they are essential in making fast decisions, but the data really helps to validate some assumptions and minimize some bias that may occur. So when you have a person that have that experience and they would want to use, let's say, that gut feeling approach, but you provide with data for that person, then that person will have more, let's say, confidence on how to make that decision, right? But the thing here, I think, which is the tricky part, is how do you translate that data in a way that for that person will be easy to understand and interpret and help them to make that decision. So I'll see that as complementary, the let's say the gut feeling approach and the data approach.
You always have something to back your decision, right? Like Captain Kirk will always, or most of the time, had Spock backing up with data. Because the bigger the operation, the costlier will be to be wrong and make wrong decisions, right?
Yeah, especially in the swine industry, right? If there's so many layers and factors that are occurring at the same time that affect performance. So when you are combining those approaches, that facilitates things.
Yeah, and tying back to this topic of leadership that was given to us, you mentioned that you worked in barns with at different levels. And so but you also mentioned you dealt with upper level management and other people in different types of environments, right? And so, do you use different tactics depending who you're dealing with, or is it all the same?
Yeah, that's a good point. I would say, like, on my work today, that we work with directly with upper management people and helping them to understand that data and how that impacts performance and everything. So what they like to see often is what's the big picture outcome of what we are doing, right? In terms of profitability and scalability. So if you start putting numbers of what's the impact of this factor on performance and what will be the ROI on that. So I think that's the type of language that upper management people would like to see when you go back to conversations. And on the other hand, you also have to talk with people like the barn workers. And those are folks that really like, let's say, actionable instructions. So if you really go there and the hands-on leadership, if you do side by side. So if you're talking about data, that's the type of people that you really have to go there and actually show how to do that. They collect that information, how it should be recorded, the importance of that. So totally different when you talk with upper management, for example. And the mid-level management, let's say the sow farm manager and those folks, they like metrics, right? And it's kind of on a long-term shot, but they like to see the metrics, what's the strategy that they're going to implement. Don't need to do a lot of the hands-on part, but you also don't need to talk about ROI, but how that strategy will benefit them. So when you're doing a project that involves all the three layers that we are mentioning here, you're trying to translate that information, the same information, but in different levels, right? So focus on what's important, what people would like to hear, depending on where, what they are doing, right, inside within the company.
Yeah, and when you talk with those folks, regardless of the position there, do you use any of those personality tools like DISC or Myers-Briggs or something different when talking with those different guys? Say one guy is a dominant, the other one is a more analytic. How do you incorporate those?
To be honest, I haven't used that in the past a lot because I wasn't aware of it. And once I got used to those methodologies like the DISC methodology, it's really helpful and really makes easy to understand people, right? When you start saying, hey, yeah, that makes sense. I don't need to waste my time or waste that person's time talking about numbers and all the details when that person is a dominant. And that person just want to know what needs to be done and what's the action and what's the expected outcome. And there's the other hand too, right? The analytical personality, which is that person that you really need to show all the details and why you're doing that and the data, the evidence, and needs to be something structured where you even have to have like a flow chart of what needs to be done, the step phase one, phase two, phase three. So once you start understanding those methodologies, that helps a lot. So since it's been a couple of years that I got familiar with that, I've been applying that to myself and also to here to my team, but also when talking with people, that's really important. So if you go to a meeting with an upper management person in a swine company, and that's a dominant personality, that person wants fast decisions and likes authority. So taking those things into consideration when you're talking to that person, straight to the point and bring the numbers, why we need to do that, that's easy to understand, and don't want to that person wouldn't like to focus too much on details.
And so it kind of depends and got to be able to adapt, right?
Yeah. So the key thing on this adaptability is to understand, right? To realize which personality you are dealing with. So the more you know about that, the personality, let's say the different characteristics that for example, DISC have, the more you understand that, the more it is easier to apply that, because you know now you start recognizing each type of personality and how you should deal with each one. Mm-hmm. So get used to learn about that. That's a good material for leadership people in leadership positions. That's a good tool.
And one of the big concerns that people have today is on compliance. How do you know if people are doing what they're supposed to do or following protocols? So what's the secret, or are there any best management practices to follow to make sure that people on farm are following as expected the protocols?
Yeah, and especially like it could be an important decision that you make, for example, with biosecurity, that upper management people knows the value of that and wants to implement and invest on that. Let's say the mid-management people also think it's important, but if you don't get the buy-in from the barn people doing that, especially, for example, with biosecurity, that's where things can get lost and we have a failure in biosecurity protocol. So you really need to have the buy-in of those people executing those procedures every day in the barn. And on that, I think the most important thing is educating those folks of the importance of why they're doing that. So it's not just, hey, you need to do this. But if you clearly, for example, demonstrate why cross-fostering is important and, for example, and what it can cause when you have a PRRS outbreak or not, or a specific nutritional protocol, those type of things are important to educate those folks that, yeah, I need to really do that. And once you do that, I think ownership is also a good thing. Make them part of that process, of that decision, let's say, of that protocol that they're doing. So educating folks, providing like ownership to them, making them to participate when you are building an SOP, for example, get their feedback and their input, and then you have the buy-in of everybody. So it's not something coming from the top as a decision, but they feel that they are part of that. So it's easier to get, let's say, compliance on that. And of course, incentives, right? Like bonus and that type of stuff. That also every time helps. Could be something small, but that's everybody likes to receive that. Don't need to be every time money, but just being recognized that something good.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
You gotta, like you said, gotta be a win-win, right? For the team, for the individuals.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're talking about importance of following protocols. And so how much should we teach people to follow protocols? In other words, pay them to do versus pay to think and think outside the protocols and do what's best in depending on the situation?
That's a million-dollar question, right? Because especially for like working in a farm, if you want to have a SOP for everything for every situation that may occur, it's a hard task, right? They're gonna have to work with a big book with them for every type of situation. So it's hard to have that SOP for each situation. But it also needs to have some flexibility. So I think understanding the process and you having, let's say, the general SOPs of that, but also understanding and providing that flexibility to making them understand that there's flexibility on the SOP because of different scenarios, and having their feedback and their input when those scenarios occur, I think that all together helps. So having general SOPs for each of those procedures that are important, but also providing that understanding for the farm personnel that there is some flexibility and that's important, and that those SOPs are adaptable over time depending on what happens. But when those scenarios happen, you need to alert and communicate, let's say, the mid-management level, say, hey, we need to update this SOP. It's not working anymore, that type of thing.
Train them on the SOPs, but have a dialogue and be open to listen. And maybe the SOP is wrong or maybe wrong depending, right? And so it's a never-going process.
That's why I like, when I was working in the farm back in Brazil as a swine vet, that's why I liked initially. My first job was as a farm manager. After finishing vet school, I went to work as a farm manager. So understanding how to work with people, I had the experience of let's say, the SOPs, what needs to be done. But then when you go to the farm, you're actually working with people. We know that not all the times they are possible to be accomplished. So that flexibility and communication is really important. So when I realized that and starting to work with my team, there were many SOPs that we have to update. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, the best way that worked for me in my career was that accountability. When you bring them to the process and make them part of the, when you are building the SOPs, make them feel part mm-hmm. of that process. Get their input on what needs to be included on that SOP. So when you do that, you really have their, like, they feel that they are part of that process. They build that SOP together with you. And when things go wrong and you have to change, they're most of the times they would come first and say, hey, we need to update this. So you don't need to see something happening wrong and make decisions. They may do that before you earlier. So I think key here is making them they feel that they are part of that process and build that with you. It's going to be they're going to feel accountable for that and going to follow that SOP.
In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the weaning transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lucta, create, connect, inspire. Visit lucta.com to learn more.
Let me just remind the listeners that this is the Swine It show. And if you can, and if you like it, please like it, love it, share it. So coming back, Edson, how do you describe it will be your leadership style?
Yeah, I like I said, from what my experience with in Brazil working swine farms and as a swine practitioner, and here, I really like to make people feel part of the process. So as in terms of leadership, I really like this having their feedback and listening to people. So that's kind of what I felt when I was working the field. But when I did the DISC profile and the Gallup personality method, that is also one of my main strengths are developer and individualization of people. So then I saw that and said, oh, that makes sense, because I really like to make people like be part of that process and help them and make them to be the best version of themselves. So those were the two top things that came into my leadership personality, the developer and individualization, but also have some analytical and responsibility on that too. So I really like working with people and making them the best version of themselves. So there was a joke that in the farm that I used to work, it started with a multiplier, and they had a sow farm, and then the last one was the win to finish, where I was the manager of that. And if you're not doing a good job in the first one, in the multiplier, you go to the sow farm, and then you go to the win to finish as the last. And fortunately, for the time that I was there, I really wanted to, okay, you didn't work on those two areas, but here we're gonna make it work. So what needs to be done? So listening to people. And I think what I did different that helped me a lot was to make them feel part of the process. So that ownership was something that I always keep doing.
Yeah, and you keep that. Yeah, that sounds good. You keep mentioning your barn days, right? And how do you think that those barn days shaped your leadership style and what you are today?
That helped me a lot to understand and the hands-on part, right? So that's something that I had to do a lot, and that shaped me to use that as a tool. But now, for example, now in academia, we don't have to do that a lot. We need to develop the other side of the person, right? Because if you start having your team and you have to do hands-on leadership with every person in your team, you're not going to develop that person, right? So you need to make them develop that critical thinking and doing things by their own and making mistakes by their own and having the accountability. So it's a different culture, but of course you use the learnings from the previous experience. So that's something that I'm doing more today. Sometimes you have to do the hands-on leadership and go and do analysis of some data with that person, show how to do what's the process. But you're always reminding and saying, hey, you need to develop that critical thinking part and the big picture and having them doing by themselves instead of expecting any direction.
A couple more questions on leadership. You must have worked with people of different leadership styles and everything. So do you think there's the right or best leadership style that everyone should follow, or at least some non-negotiables for effective leadership? How do you characterize best practices for leadership?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person that is in the position as a leader. It depends on the style of that person. So, for example, in my style, some people wouldn't be able to do it, or I wouldn't be able to do it from another person because of different styles. So as long as you are always respecting, or in terms of, let's say, the non-negotiables, will be respecting the person, your team. So this is something that you create a respectful environment, that's critical. So that's something, independently of the leadership style, every leader that follows that rule, that creates and avoids any problems within your team. And also that ownership, I think that's something that goes beyond leadership style. I think if everyone does that, that's easier to have better results, in my opinion, in your team, right? Because they feel part of it. People are ready for going. I used to say, like, they wake up in the morning and go to work. They just do that for money. But how can some people may do that just for money? But even though they are there, so how can you make their day better? So if you make them feel part of that process, that's something that really, especially with barn personnel, that really helps. So I think it's context dependent in that case, like the leadership style. There's no right or one size fits all, in my opinion.
It's got to be so respectful and listener is what I hear you saying, right? Those are some good non-negotiables.
Yeah.
And can it be learned? Can leadership be learned? Because that's describe your career, right? You mentioned that program, you went to grad school, your animal science now teaching students. Leadership is not part of any curriculum or any of those degrees, is it? How do you learn and how do you take the time to learn or develop?
Yeah, I think by doing, right? Like you said, we don't have that, especially in my case, we didn't have any background in vet school for that. So the only way to learn is to actually do it. But in my opinion, I think everyone can learn that. Even people that don't think that they can be leaders. I'm not a leader. I'm just going to follow orders. I don't think that person is not a leader. That person can also develop leadership styles. Their way respecting may not be like a dominant or that person, but there's a way to apply leadership independently of your personality. So I think it can be learned, and the only way to do that is actually go there and apply. So as long as you have opportunity to lead a team, getting access to these tools, to understanding the different personalities, all those leadership tools that are available out there, that can be learned, in my opinion.
Oh, that's great, Edson. And we talked a lot about leadership in the field, right? And how about in the corporate world? You worked for with one of the world's largest food production companies in the world, and at some point you were awarded the Field Vet of the Year or something like that. So you must know a couple of things on how to succeed in that environment. So what do you say? What do you say there?
I think, like my previous boss used to tell me, the positive in conformism. So I think that was key for me in that world. But yeah, that's where the money talks, right? If you're mm-hmm. not delivering, if you're not having results, and usually if you're not having short-term results, it's a problem for you. So you are under pressure. And if you are under pressure and you're still not having results, you need to show that you're finding your way to solve that problem. You're not sitting on that problem, and it is what it is. So I think I used to hear that a lot on that world, that there needs to be a way out. There needs to be something that we can do. Even if what we did should be the right thing and it's not working, there might be a different way. So find another way. Don't sit on the problem. Always seek a different approach. If it's not working, change fast and try another thing.
But make sure you deliver.
Yeah, that's what I try to do and implement when I was there. Because it's like I said, it's a lot of pressure and it's fast. You need to have fast results.
It must be challenging because you gotta have fast results. But at the same time, there's a lot of SOPs that you need to follow. A lot of rules. A lot of bosses, supervisors.
Yeah.
And you're measured by performance of farms, and you're not necessarily the farm owner or farm manager, right? So you've got to really be exercising your leadership skills to make sure things move according to your vision.
that's why it's kind of tricky or dangerous, because there's a lot of excuses too, right? So you say, oh, it's not my fault. It's fault of the logistics. It's not fault of the vets. They didn't deliver the vaccine on time. So I'm sitting on the problem, right? So, okay, they didn't deliver on time, but maybe help them find another person to deliver another route. So there's always a way out. Just don't blame it the other person, especially like in a large company world, like you mentioned, because there might be a lot of excuses to sit on it.
Like Tina Peterson says, right? Focus on the solution, not the problem. There's got to be a solution, right?
Yeah.
How about academia, Edison? How about any new insights, or is it more of the same what we're talking about, leadership in academia?
No, I think it's especially like having students and on that position, it's a long-term process in my vision. So it's not as fast like in a corporate world, because you are developing a person, right? If, for example, if you're talking about a master's or PhD student and you are his major professor, you don't expect that person to arrive and already deliver everything, right? There will be a learning curve on that process. So there needs to be patience. You need to provide the tools. You need to have some time for that person needs to adapt and learn and prepare themselves and get the right tools. So you need to apply all that patience and at the same time create, let's say, the best or pave the best road for that person as much as possible. So facilitate things. So it's, in my opinion, totally different. But at the end of the day, both are trying to reach same goals, right? It's developing people and making them to be the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. The approaches are different, for example, when you have to deal with students, or if you have a farm that you are the veterinarian of that farm and it's hyper immortality and you need to reduce. So you really need to go there now and show hands-on management procedures and go there, sleep during overnight, for example, and reduce mortality on that day and say, hey, it is possible. Mm-hmm. And with a student may take more time. You say, hey, you need to learn this statistical package and need some time to study that and validate. So it's a little bit different.
All right. No, that's great. I've been enjoying the conversation. We're going to move to the final three questions. But before doing so, anything else you'd like to highlight on leadership that we have not talked about so far?
No, yeah. I think we covered most of it. It's depending on where you are, you need to apply different approaches. And depending on the person, the approach will also change. So the more I'm learning and studying about it, the more the easier it is to apply, right? So go after those tools. If you are in a leadership position, those tools are available out there. So the more you study, the more they're going to help you.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Keys Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com. Have you considered adding cheese to your feed? Let us help. Keys Manufacturing is a family-owned and operated business, conveniently located in central Illinois. We have been producing Pro 88 cheese powder since 1997. Pro 88 is a high-quality source of protein and milk fat. Our cheese powder is research-proven to contribute to a smooth transition in early weaning pigs, being highly palatable, increasing feed intake, as well as delivering easily digestible nutrients. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com for more information and links to our research. We look forward to helping you maximize your feed.
Yeah, well, that's great. So the three final quick questions are, in your view, what differentiates successful individuals?
Yeah, I think I mentioned that before, but this, let's say, don't sit on the problem, or like Tina Peterson said, don't focus on the problem, focus on the solution. I think that's one of the major things for me. If you are that type of person, and if you avoid excuses, and you always find a way, even though everybody's saying that it's not possible to be done or it's hard, don't listen to that, and you are always trying to solve that issue. I think that's a really good skill that successful people would have.
Give it a shot.
Because there are many excuses for many reasons, many things that we are doing in academia or in the field or in a big company. So I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And resilience, right? Because so along that, the resilience and the capability to adapt to different scenarios, different challenges. So it's always, even though you're always focusing on the solution and not on the problem, you may have to focus on the solution for 1-2 years without solving the problem. Depending on the issue that you have, it's not easy to solve. So being resilient and keeping yourself motivated to keep chasing that solution, it's important too.
Your tips or tricks for resources on leadership, do you have a favorite one or a couple you could share?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with a lot, but one that I, 3 years ago, I got very familiar with that one, and it's the Servant Leader book, and it's a really nice tool. I think it really helped me a lot, and I think for people that are getting to know more on that area, it really helps you. And they use also some these tools to describe different personality and how to deal with different people, and always try to be comparing those different types of leadership. And what they mention is that the right one is this servant leadership, right? To be a servant of your team. So I think that's a tool that one tool that I would advise people to have to use this book.
How about your favorite non-technical book, if you can share?
Yeah, non-technical book. I think I mentioned that, you know, another place, but the 12 Rules for Life book by Jordan Peterson. I think that's a really nice book. And if you just Google 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson, you're gonna see the rules. And just by looking at that list, you see, yeah, that makes sense. Life would be easier with that. But it's hard, but it was a really nice book that I read, and advise people also to look at it. My favorite one.
Well, that's great. Thank you for all the tips and tricks. It was fun talking with you, and that's all about we had for today. So thank you, and for the listeners, see you next time.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.